हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Chaitanya Upanayanam. This is Nyaya Sutra.
Sankhita Sarayakam Sankhitas are in the form of mantras and brahmanas only in prose like instructions.
Brahmanas.
Brahmanas.
Whether they're prose.
There is no mantras, there is only instructions.
He's talking about it means the Veda itself. These instructions can be in the form of verses, but the point is that the Veda itself, the Samhita, means those particular verses. So these are outside of those verses, and the Brahmanas are explaining how to use those verses in the context of the performance of duties and other things.
So my question is, we see that only in Brahmanas these three divisions, because in Arangyakas and Upanishad is not karma point, only jhana and upasana, or because some difference in the form. Why we don't see?
Means Upanishads are just, means, okay, let's try this. You have the Samhitas, or the hymns, right? So those hymns are there. Now those hymns need to be understood and applied. So when you want to apply them practically, you know, in the activities of karma, you know, in a practical activity or a ritual, the Brahmanas explain how to use those verses in that. The Aranyakas explain the metaphysics of those verses, and the Upanishads explain the philosophy of those same verses. Does that make sense? So it's just different aspects, so it's considered you understand the Vedas if you understand all four. So you have four Vedas, they have these four parts. So the point is, it's understanding all four parts that makes it inappropriate. Because some will just study only Samhitas or only the Brahmanas or like that.
Why would they do that?
Because they now, let's say as a brahmachari, you go to the Gurukul and you learned all the verses of the Veda. So you know the full Samhita. You learned Rig Veda. But you may not have learned how to apply them. So that's the point. As Grihastha, then they would go into the Brahmanas and then study how to use them for doing the samskaras and the rituals and the yajnas and all that. And that way then they maintain themselves. But as a vanaprastha, because he's also... Here is not so much this point. As a vanaprastha, then they would have the tendencies that now they're trying to see the connection between what they were doing, the rituals, and the absolute truth. While the Upanishads just deal with the absolute truth. So it's understood is that when you get to Upanishads, you already understand how the others work. Does that make sense? You know, so or you might get a brahmachari, he studies the Samhitas, and then he doesn't graduate. He just stays a nice big brahmachari. So basically, he just goes into the Aranyakas and Upanishads. So he may not get involved in that at all. you know, generally you know something so you can explain. Because if you're explaining things to grihasthas that deal with those things, you'd want to be able to give, you know, some example of something they're aware of. So in that way you might know. But your actual view is from the Upanishads. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because the brahmacharis, they're learning the one thing, the grihasthas will see from that. Does that make sense? With that, yeah. So maybe also the brahmanas can, in there, if it's talking about the jnana, they may be also defining certain aspects of what they do or their sadhana or lifestyle. Because the Upanishads doesn't deal with that. It just deals with the philosophy. So, in other words, your lifestyle would be described in the brahmanas. So, because there you get the Dharma Sutras and the Griha Sutras. They come out of the brahmanas. That makes sense. So everything goes back to the Brahmanas. But then when persons who know those, when they discuss those with other great personalities and they're discussing the essence of that, that becomes the Smriti. That's the stuff we can use. So in other words, them, by studying the Veda, they've understood that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, we might not get that. You know, it's just like you study the Upanishads, you might not understand the philosophy as well. You know, because people understand study the Upanishads, but they're not Vedantists. So that means they didn't actually understand the Upanishads. You know, and then if they're impersonalists, they still didn't understand. They understand a little more. They've got it to the Brahman level. You know, or the yogis may get the Paramatma, but until you get to the Bhagavan, you don't actually understand Vedanta. Does that make sense? So that's the point. It means your conclusion of the whole thing is that Krishna is true Bhagavan Swayam. That is the conclusion of the whole thing. Because when you know the original, then you know everything that expands from it. But otherwise, we were talking the other day in Bombay. A devotee there, he's from a, you know, Pakka Sri Vaishnava background. You know, knows all the things, knows all the rituals. He's not initiated yet, so he's still a new bhakta. You know, he's been, you know, in that zone, you can be a new bhakta for 12 years, so it's not really sad. You know, he's quite well situated. But you know, every time you go out on the veranda to hang up your gumshoe, that he's out in the back there chanting all the mantras for the Sandhya Vandana. So we just, you know, sit down and wrap the thread around the thumb and then start chanting. But for them, there's the whole thing of purifying the water, Apohish, there's three mantras, and then they call the Gayatri and all that, and then offer prayers and things like that. Then they chant.
Why don't we do that?
At the same time as I don't know if you've had the experience that sometimes there's a certain point in the whole Mangalartik program where there's a whole bunch of guys facing east down by Prabhupada and completely ignoring any other devotional activities going on. And they really think they're doing the advanced thing when actually they're missing the point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes the point is that that's why. You have the thing of what's favorable and unfavorable. And he gives the example that, let's say, a Bhagavatam class discussion is going on, and the time for chanting Gayatri comes up, then for the devotee, he wouldn't leave the Bhagavatam discussion and go chant Gayatri, because Gayatri is to bring you to the point of removing the material contamination so that you can be situated in the transcendental platform. You're hearing Bhagavatam, that's already on the transcendental platform. So the purpose of it has been accomplished. Doesn't mean you won't chant your Gayatri, it's just when the class is over, and instead of chanting it at, you know, 6 o'clock, you might chant it at 8 o'clock. Does that make sense? So then the problem comes there is that how many people would be able to do that? Those that have that more brahminical nature and that, they would be comfortable with it because it's 3 times a day every day, and then you add on top of that, technically, you're supposed to be standing in water and facing a certain direction. and also where your hand is. Like that. Means you chant it here, the Gayatri, or you chant it here. No, I think in the evening you chant here, probably because things are going on. You know, and then the women chanting here.
The first thing is, can you observe the sandhya?
Yeah, can you see the sandhya? That would be a real problem if you wanted to do that pukka. Let's say you're up, let's say you're in Petersburg. So that means then the morning sandhya would be about between 2 and 3 in the morning, and then the evening sandhya
would be the same.
You know.
I tried. I get there and try to sing, and it gets really darker. Yeah. Gave up at midnight.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just a matter of once the sun goes down, that period, that period between there and when it's dark, that's the sandhya. It's just that here the sandhya is 48 minutes. But when you go up there, it's, you know, it gets extended. I even remember, I think it was, we were in, right in the middle of somewhere, it was somewhere there, and let's say, here is east, you know? That the east would be that way. And the sun would come up, and then it would come up, and go around this way like this, and then it'd go around like that, and it'd go back down in the east. Not exactly in the same place. It'd be a little bit over, you know, a few degrees, you know, let's say, yeah, 20 degrees, 30 degrees, like that. So the distance between them in the eastern horizon, if you take the middle, it'd be off by, you know, 10 degrees each way. But I was told if you go farther up north, it doesn't go down. Or, I mean, it just dips below. You can still see the rays, but you can't see the sun. And then it comes up, so it just kind of goes, just dips like that and goes around. So it's just that, you know, and I think it's higher. So it just goes around like this and goes down. So short. So that would, like you said, you'd have to do all three Gayatris at that time. You know, like that, the sun dips down for this much. So. But it'd be easy. You could just say the Sandhya Vandana once and then chant all three Gayatris and then do one Visarga. Yeah, so it would be very practical. Some benefits. Some benefits. But it's just one more thing that, you know, adds in, you know, and there's, I generally see myself, there's not a great balance when you add these things in. You know, it's just like on the Ekadasi, no grains, no beans, you know, that's what it is. And so we don't follow beyond that. But then I remember the other day someone's going, oh, how can we eat tomatoes? It's got, you know, Bahu Bija, you know, so it means so many seeds. Anything with many seeds you can't eat on Ekadasi. You know, so that means no tomatoes, no pork dolls, no
eggplant.
Yeah, eggplant,
what
cucumber.
About chia
seeds?
They're all seed.
Chia. But if you just take one chia seed and drop it into your drink, then that's fine. But if you take more than one, nah, that's a problem. That's a handful of seeds. I think it's for what it comes from. The chia probably comes, I doubt there's one chia seed on one chia, you know, flower, fruit.
We don't know what it is.
But you cannot eat figs.
Yeah, figs.
Figs because of the so many seeds. But the thing is if you're going to get into that level, then you're supposed to be fasting and eating nothing and staying up all night. You know, after lunch on the dasami, you don't eat dinner. And then on the next day, you don't sleep on the dwadasi until sundown. No. So that means you're going to be very careful and you're going to eat at noon. You're not going to eat first thing in the morning. So it's a 48-hour vrata, actually. So as the thing is, something's added in like that. Where did that come from? What do you mean? Who brought that up? We don't follow that. I've never heard of it. I only heard of this like 2 years ago or something. I'm at lunch and somebody's, oh, Bahu Bija. And I said, who cares? Where does that come from? It may be one of the things in Hari Bhakti Vilas, but if you check, there's probably 10 pages in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Why did they take that one out?
And then the fun part is, there are some devotees who strictly follow the Ekadasi, as you said. Everybody fears them, and they don't go near them. Because you will go pulled in there, then they have to follow the whole thing.
Yeah.
There are some sannyasis who do.
Yeah. Yeah, so you just... So it's like that. That's the difficulty. If you add that, then what about all the other things? What about, you know, what is mentioned, the deity worship thing, getting up and doing all the things? And when you step out of the bed in the morning, right foot on the ground first, and then you chant the mantra for respecting the earth, and then you go, and then there's all these mantras for everything. That's my point. You're not fed everybody here, so we'll do the whole thing, you know, like that. Like, you see all those guys there, they're all so straight. And so, you know, which is nice, it's pious, but at the same time, the chanting Hare Krishna for the Tulsi's kirtan, that would be more pious. Because she's the one that will, by her grace you get love of God. Nowhere does it says by chanting Brahma Gayatri that you get love of God. No? It's there to bring you off the bottom of the platform. Yes?
I just recently heard Govinda Das explain, this is like 67 or something.
Oh, okay.
And then she explains how Gaurasundar and some other male devotee, they were harassing Srila Prabhupada to give them Gayatri. Because, from her explanation, they didn't hear about Gayatri from Srila Prabhupada, because by that time he didn't mention it.
Uh-huh.
So somehow they figured it out, and they were, you know, like going after Srila Prabhupada and asking, okay, what about Gayatri, what about Gayatri? And then she says that Srila Prabhupada was very reluctant to even discuss it, not to give it to them, but even to, but still, they were like really adamant. So he said, okay, after 2 days, I'll give you guys Gayatri. And they were like completely in bliss. Then they were also two ladies. And they were thinking like, what's going on? The guy's getting Gayatri, but what about us? But they didn't talk to Srila Prabhupada, but obviously they were like, you know, unhappy. Mm-hmm. And then she explains that actually after 2 days, Srila Prabhupada gave the Gayatri to the guys, and they were like completely...
And didn't give to the ladies.
Not to the ladies. But then after 2 days, from their initiation, he gave Gayatri also to the ladies, because he realized if he's not doing that, it's not going to be good. So from her explanation, because this was... You know, in Gaudiya Math, it's a bit different, because you actually becoming a proper disciple in Gaudiya Math after you get the Gayatri from the Guru. Before, it's like, it's kind of nice, it's preliminary, you chant Harinam, but for Srila Prabhupada, apparently, I don't know, that's what I heard from her, and some others as well, but he was like reluctant. He had full faith in the holy name. But Gayatri, he wasn't like, I don't know.
You have to be situated in the mode of goodness for it to work. See, is that the holy name is independent. Gayatri is not. Mm. Gayatri only works if you're situated in the mode of goodness. That's the thing. Is so unless they have that consciousness and that stableness and steadiness, you can chant it, but you won't get really much benefit. It's not like the holy name is you chant it, even if you're not paying attention to Gayatri, you don't pay attention to these things. It just doesn't get benefits. That's the whole thing about it. So are they on that platform? And that thing of splitting it, the diksha, into two parts, where they get the holy name and like that. So you're doing the first three samskaras in the first initiation, the last two in the second. That was started by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But from what I can see, the Gaudiya Math doesn't really follow that properly.
Really?
No, it's just like we said. It's that diksha. You get the whole thing like that. I haven't heard that they split it up like that. Even if they do, they don't take it serious. They don't consider you initiated until the second one.
Yeah,
that's why you could get first from you know, what we'd call first. Let's say from any of the gurus, you don't have to take second from them. You could decide that you want to take second from someone else. But whoever you take that second from. That is diksha. Mm. That's your guru.
Mm-hmm.
So, but really just consider you kind of connecting the people. That's why you see is that, you know, four rounds, this, that, you know, they have their initiation, you chant four rounds and do the best you can. And, and they're cool, and they would consider, they would, you know, consider what they're doing is like what we're doing, and it's not. Mm-hmm. We're is actually the proper, it's the first stage of the pancharatic initiation. So who gives you first is the guru. You know, so that's why you see is that those who were first initiated by Prabhupada but didn't get second, they took from someone else. Prabhupada is technically the guru. And who gave second is a rich Prabhupada. So and it also then gets mixed up with what's called Nama Guru. Mm-hmm. The Nama Guru simply means the person that inspires you to chant Hare Krishna. You know, like let's say you're out in public and that you meet somebody, and in the discussion you get them, you know, talk about Hare Krishna and the importance of chanting, and you, let's say you give them a card with a mantra and get them to chant. You are their Nama Guru. Yeah, it'd be Vartma Pradarsha, but it's also, but it's Vartma Pradarsha could get you to be interested in the process or interested in devotional service. But specifically, the one who got you to chant, showed you how to chant, that's Nama Guru. You know, like that devotee in the temple.
Yeah, yeah.
All those guests, you know, he's more Nama disciples than anyone in the movement. I mean, literally. It means put everyone together, they don't have as many as him. Literally. You know, and so, but it's taken that Nam, because it's Hari Nam initiation, they take Nama Guru Hari Nam, Abha Guru Hari Nam, hey, it's the same, you know, but it's not. So that's where also then that thing came up about, because I think it's from Narottam Das Thakur, there's one elder lady in the village, she's the Nama Guru Narottam Das. So see, ladies are giving first initiation. No, they're not, they're just getting in the chant. Because at that time, diksha was all of it together. That's another thing. You know, it's just like you join, somebody convinces you to chant, and then you're at the temple and you're chanting japa, but you don't get first initiation for another 6 months. Or, you know what I'm saying? So the difficulty comes up there is that not knowing the terminology, knowing the culture, and so it all gets mixed up. Mm-hmm. So in here, I would say the reluctance would be is they didn't have, because if you see it, there's some of those first initiations or marriages and that, you know, how much hair was on their head? Many of them weren't even shaved.
A lot of hair.
Yeah. And so they got to the point where they had the faith that you could say they could take initiation on that level. But at the same time, they weren't at the point of having that mode of goodness lifestyle. Like they didn't even help Prabhupada cook or clean, prepare, nothing. They just sat downstairs. It was time for prasadam. They went upstairs, sat, ate, Prabhupada served. After they finished eating, they washed their hands and left. You know, so therefore, and then you see at one point, then Prabhupada just made, because, you know, you're going to be doing this, then he made it very strict. And he says, you can't be in the temple if you don't shave. You can't, you know, so there was that one devotee who had, was having a problem with drugs and all that. And because before that, as long as something was going on, it was cool. But at the same time, Prabhupada, he came to the door and Prabhupada gave a point, you know, this has to be followed. I stood at the door for a while thinking about it, and then he walked off. So you say, oh, he lost it, he had to get the standard. So the problem made the thing, you have to shave your heads, because hippies are super attached to their hair, because hair is their identity. You know, there's no bald hippies.
they have a different definition.
Yeah, yeah. Even if they're old, so they have no much hair in their head, that little bit on the sides and back, that's long. You know? You ever see that picture of...
Insta.
Yeah, him, but also, this is the one that always stands out to me, is Da Vinci. Leonardo, there's one of a sketch. He's there, an old guy, you know, bald up, very seriously bald on top. Everything otherwise down to his shoulders. Half down long hair, otherwise you're not a hippie. If your clothes fit and you don't have long hair, you're not a hippie. At least on the West Coast hippies. East Coast seemed to be in the beginning, they were actually hippies, but they didn't have necessarily long hair. They were dressed casual. So they didn't. So they didn't necessarily have the lifestyle of the sadhana at that point. I think by the time you got to, because you said that was early 66 or something.
Yeah, 67.
I think it was I think it was by 68, then we had started to have more of a regular program and all that. But it wasn't until 1980 that Prabhupada established the morning program we have now. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So in that way, then I think it's a bit on the that need that mode of goodness, because if we're going to do it, it has to be because it's duty, not because it's cool. Like they're pestering Prabhupada because it's cool and this and something more and unique and hidden and secret, and rather than it's duty, because that one Brahma said, no one else is doing it. There's not really a nice place to sit, because he's living in the room with a bunch of other brahmacharis. You must have at some point had the misfortune of walking into a brahmachari room where, you know, four brahmacharis live. No? Yeah. It's not. There's no question of the mode of goodness there. He goes out on the back veranda, you know, and out there then he would chant and stuff. And the thing, funny part is the east was the opposite side. Mm-hmm. You can't sit on the other side because it's an open hallway. Everyone walks, but the back, you can only go out there through going out the back door of your room. So the only people out there are the ones hanging up their gumshoe, and that's it. You know, they're not out there talking and stuff. So you can go out there and chant. So then he's there. That was all the discussion just on this. The point was, the point was is that about our Gaudiya Acharyas, how they know the topmost, and what they're giving is the topmost, because I was discussing with him some points of Ramanuja's philosophy and all that, and he was very well read in it. So he's from a family of practicing Sri Vaishnavas. You know, so they're, you know, Pukka Brahmins, they do things like that. So then the thing was is they only know, you know, how you have Krishna, that he expands as Balaram. Balaram expands as Mahanarayan. Let me, or then you have the Chakravyuha, Sankarshan Prajumna Aniruddha, the first one. It's actually expanded from Krishna. You know, so you have Krishna Bala like this. Then you have, from that Sankarshan, in Dwarka, you have Mahanarayan. You know? So then that Mahanarayan is, as far as they know, they do not know beyond that. So that's Param Padam. That's the topmost. And the fun part, I was talking, well, you know, in Vaikuntha, are they, the Sri's into any particular, the 24 Vishnu Murti says, we don't know about those. There's only Parampara. That's it. There's only Mahanarayan. There is no one else. In the material world, you have all these different incarnations, Nishinga, this and that. They don't know that they are there in the spiritual world. That's just, they're all expanding from, you know, from him expands, then, you know, so the Chakravyuha, that's the pastimes that Krishna and Balaram perform. Right? So in other words, in Dwarka, then for everybody else, they're seeing the second Chakravyuha. But for us, we're seeing the first Chakravyuha. That's why there's no difference there. Like you saw in the Vidagdhamana. Wasn't it Vidagdha or was it Lalitamana? Is that even the names of who's speaking is given Radha speaking, you know, Chandravani speaking, Satyabhama, so like this. But in when they're addressing each other, they'll address each other as Rukmini, Satyabhama. But Rupa Goswami says Radharani speaking like that. Because, and you see at the end, they're saying, okay, let's go back to Vrindavan. You know, it was nice. This is a fun pastime. Let's go back. I miss Vrindavan. So then that's the ending. So that's the first Chakravyuha. It's Krishna's expanding. But in the second, then it's Sankarshan and, you know, it's a whole, it's a very subtle thing. So they only know up to that point. They do not know anything else. I was surprised.
Also the difference, the first Chakravyuha is called Krishna Vyuha. We saw that to the end of Krishna Sandarbha.
Yes.
But the Vrajavasis seeing Krishna, they don't even see the first Chaturvyuha, because the first Chaturvyuha is already not in the Swayam Rupa category. It is Tadekatma, the Prabhava Vilasa.
Okay.
They see in the Swayam category that Krishna who manifests himself as various forms.
Okay, so they don't even see outside of that, okay.
So it's the Swayam category.
Does that make sense? It's even more. So they don't even see that. It's just Krishna from Vrindavan happens to be in Dwarka or Mathura. It's not.
A different mode if you manifest there. It's Vaibhav Prakash, otherwise, it's just Prabhav Prakash. It's just manifesting a form as an expansion.
Okay, yes. But they just see it's the same person. It's just like, you know, you see the person that you know and hang out with and joke, but then you see him in a very formal situation and all, you know, everything's, you know, so then, does that make sense? You know, like that. So that would be. But my point is that they don't see anything beyond. So that's why I think also Madhva is the same. They don't see anything beyond that. So I remember showing to one big scholar, and it's one of the main scholars within the Madhva, and probably at that time would be one of the biggest well-renowned scholars. And I was asking him to chant Brahma Samhita, because they do it in a particular, melodic style. Like we generally chant it in kind of the shlokas, but they would sing it. Not Brahma Samhita, they just have a style. I wanted them to do that for Brahma Samhita. And so he did, but then afterwards he was commenting, kind of like, he was saying it loud enough you could hear, but at the same time it was more his own contemplation. He said, something wrong with these verses, there's something not right here. Because he had never even heard that there's a concept that there's something beyond, that there's that original that from Vraj, because for them, no. Then Mahanarayan is the original. And then you have these Vrindavan pastimes. So from there, lower Goloka Vrindavan will expand. You know, so then all those, you know, the other sampradayas, other than the Gaudiyas, they're worshipping Radha Krishna there. They're not worshipping Radha Krishna in the original form. So it appears no one except the Gaudiyas gets to that place. So he was just saying something, he said there's something wrong with the verses. It's not.
Actually, this point makes perfect sense, because when somebody sees Aishwarya of Lord, and it naturally covers the Madhurya aspect.
Mm.
I mean, there will be some sweetness, but naturally it covers the full Madhurya aspect. You cannot see that simultaneously. Yeah. That's why the qualification to enter into Raj is not to be affected by the Aishwarya of Lord. Otherwise,
yeah, because they can see opulence, but it doesn't affect them.
Yes.
It doesn't change them. Because Vrindavan's more opulent than Dwarka,
mm-hmm.
but it's not seen because nobody cares about it. Yeah, so we should be convinced that Vrindavan's given the highest it is, because the others just don't even know about it. There's no idea. Yeah. No. Okay, then on the bottom of 3. Nyaya Kovidaha. Everything that is said by Krishna is representative. They are not dogmas. Those who are not representative of Krishna, they will say simply dogmas. Just like in every religion, there is dogma. But in Bhagavad religion, Bhagavad Dharma, there is no dogma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Bhagavad Dharma, the Chaitanya Charitamrita's author, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, says, therefore, that Chaitanyara Dayara Kata Karaha Vichara. Vichara means you just try to understand the gift of Lord Chaitanya by logic. Vichara. Right? So, when you're looking at it from different angles, it means you're analyzing it logically. You know? Then you get that. So, that the Vichara means to apply that. So, then we see here is that the logic and the philosophy go together. It's a natural consequence. It means bhakti doesn't require the logic. The philosophy, but it's that in our conditioned state, it's a very useful tool. So therefore, the acharyas have put it together very nicely so that they go together. Does that make sense? Yeah. Don't follow blindly. So, you know, we should understand. Following blindly means something that is not good. Yeah, so then, you know how sometimes they'll say you're following something or being a little bit more strict, oh, you're just blindly following. Like that. And at the same time, but then all this modern stuff, people just say it, politically correct, it's blind following. Why does it? What does it mean? How does it work? What benefit has it ever given anybody at any time, other than political benefit? Because they take it as correctness, just applied in the political field, but no, it's politics that's done in a way that's least offensive. So political correctness is pleasant politics. Like you see those who are really good, means now it's by words and that they define it. But before it was just that you have the two old guys, these two old businessmen or two very powerful people coming in contact. They're smiling, they're laughing. Hey, you know, I heard that, you had a little problem in the market yesterday, you know, like that. Means, you know, he just lost, you know, $30 billion and all that. Yeah, but, you know, the other guy, yeah, you know, something happens, but, you know, I mean, you went through it too, remember? Remember I had to loan you that money and all that, you know, so they're just each harassing and poking, trying to harass, but they're saying it so pleasantly that you just have to, okay, you know. Everybody else is, oh, they're having a nice conversation. They're trying to rip each other to shreds, but they're doing it very pleasantly. That's political correctness. That's its original form. It's just called diplomacy. But if you use diplomacy now, oh, that's bad. So political correctness, now it's good. It's the same thing. No? Yeah. Huh? Okay. That will not stay. Following blindly something that is not good, that will not stay, because at some point if you run into somebody who convinces you in another way, you might get distracted. But one should take everything with logic. But the servants of God, they put everything in logic. Chitanyera doyara kota karaha vichar. If you study the Chaitanya's philosophy with logic and argument, don't go by sentiment. The so-called missionary, they're simply bogus propaganda without any logic. Without any logic. Just like some missionary people are propagating a man to become God. How a man can become God? There must be evidence as how God incarnates, not that somebody by worshipping a demigod becomes God. So many false propaganda is going on. That is not logical at all. So one should be intelligent to understand the philosophy of Krishna or philosophy of Lord Chaitanya with logic and argument. Don't follow blindly. But once you accept, you cannot argue. That's also important. You don't accept blindly. You analyze it now when you're convinced. That's why you're doing it, because you're convinced. But once you're convinced, now you don't change. So, you know, you see now is that they add political correctness and have to change the philosophy or different things like that. That's not allowed. New people think like that, okay, you explain it to them so they can understand it in their field. If you become like that, well, everyone else is like that, we have to become like that, otherwise they won't accept this. It's kind of like, who are these people that you're trying to impress? Who are they? What are they doing? Are they religious at all? Do they, you know, who are they talking about? You have to accept blindly, but that's once you've analyzed it, then now it's here. But before accepting, you take to logic. But when you accept, then don't go back. Then that is fall down. Like, so that means he's pointing out you don't accept the philosophy and you go back to your old philosophies, you've actually fallen down. Prabhupada said philosophical fall down is worse than, you know, your regular ordinary. Yeah. The sensual is that the philosophy is not disturbed, you've been distracted. But the other one is that your philosophy is distracted. Now, to what degree, where are you actually following, where will it be progressive in pure devotion? So areas of your philosophy that aren't disturbed, that might be progressing all right, but other areas that are not, then there'll be a big problem. Yes. Lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam 6.21-5, Calcutta, January 6, 1971, right? So he's talking to the Bengalis, right? They're smart, but they're sentimental.
And the mission is Ramakrishna.
Yeah, and then Ramakrishna mission and stuff like that. Yeah, this mission, yeah. And so then you see, he Prabhupada's saying it as it is, because Bengalis can handle it. That's the thing, they don't get. You can be heavy like this, they like it. Same as South also, they like it when you're really heavy. North, you have to be a little more careful. Okay, we are now preparing a book on philosophical discussions. Shyamasundara is daily discussing with me the views of the different Western philosophers, and we are studying them from the ISKCON point of view. This work is going on regularly, and Aravinda is typing them regularly. So very soon a book will come out. When I go back to India, I shall review all the Indian systems of philosophy also, from this angle of vision, so that this book will be very much interesting to the student class in the schools and colleges. Letter to Karlandara, Nairobi, October 16, 1971. So it seems that I don't know, is there that spiritual dialecticism? Do they get into the six systems?
No.
It's just the Western, so it didn't get published.
That is the spiritual dialecticism. This one.
Yeah, that's what became that. Those, I guess the tapes on that is was typed up, but there's somehow or another it's...
They lost.
Oh, okay.
Shyamasundar did it, interviewed Srila Prabhupada, but then...
They were lost. So only what Aurobindo typed was what was still left.
Yeah, most of it was lost, but partial.
So that means that all the systems and all that success, so Prabhupada was doing that.
Yeah.
Modern philosophy of six systems.
Yeah. He writes in his book about Srila Prabhupada, what's that name?
Chasing
the Rhinos was a Swami. He actually goes into a lot of details.
Oh, okay.
How they did it, because he studied philosophy in the school, so he was actually qualified, and Srila Prabhupada was inspired, and when the tapes were lost, Prabhupada was so upset, but also inspired to do it again, but it never happened.
Well, that's the difficulty with some of those not inspired with them. Because you put all your energy, and then there's so many other things you move on to.
Yeah, and also Shyamasundar then left the service after a while. He wasn't his secretary anymore.
Okay.
So probably he didn't have any.
Yeah, because just whoever's there means at any moment when you can, you just sit down and then do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah, somehow or another Krishna is somehow doing. Yeah.
Okay.
So we know that it's there, the Prabhupada was doing on those two.
Yeah, I just wanted to share some devotees, they're trying to revive Bhaktivedanta Institute. Means
it's not happening, I understand.
Well, it's kind of, it was for many years, it went, I don't know where.
Okay.
But now they're really trying. So they sent me, it's on the point of non-dogmatic. They sent me some nice definition. I think it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice or not, we'll see. The definition of science. So they write, to qualify as scientific, any theory must first be rational, non-dogmatic. Its conclusions should logically follow from several fundamental premises. 2. Explain the maximum number of observed phenomena. 3. Be universally applicable, i.e. work anytime, anywhere. And 4. Be experimentally verifiable.
Yeah, so they have it's verifiable. You sit down, you chant, and you'll see the result.
Standard definition.
Standard. Okay. So it's good.
So it might not work on rats.
Rats, yeah.
Do they still use white rats?
I don't know. What they're using now.
Aren't they discriminating? No, scientists are discriminating. Only white rats are not using. And that means that's only nice, clean ones that have lived in a laboratory, eating nice food and all that. What about the rats in the street, too? You know, I'm not so fortunate. They don't get to take part in the science. Why are they discriminated against? why don't they bring in one of those Paris rats?
The problem is like this, Maharaj. Some devotee, he made one instrument which could do more work than a lie detector. Like, you know, for criminals and... You can find out so many things. He made a fabulous presentation. Okay, and then he was talking to a big office. He took him to a jail, and then they now put it to test on one criminal. This was in Bengal, I think, or Bihar somewhere. They put it on the criminal, and nothing happened. And when they took it out, and then they asked the criminal, they said, then he said that, I know how the instrument functions, and then he was purposefully in mind thinking something else, and he told like few details. So the street guys, they're much cleverer than the
scientists. So that's why they stick to the white house. So then we're actually saying that the whites are a little bit less smart. Oh, okay. Yeah, that could be
well, it's a fool, in fact.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shame to admit that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like such a... this devotee worked for almost 10 years and then...
To make this thing.
To make this thing. And the first experiment blown up completely. You don't do all those illegal guys. Like, no, they know how things... how to manipulate. Like, God.
Yeah. That's so funny. Okay, so no Paris rats.
Yeah. I think Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, because he was doing experiments before joining Krishna consciousness, and he's apparently traumatized. I mean, he mentions it in his classes, and then he said, I was always puzzled how by killing we can improve life. So even before becoming Krishna consciousness, he wasn't convinced in science. But still he did it for his, you know, PhD, whatever. Yeah. But that part he never liked. And then after, you know, reading Srila Prabhupada's book, he realized it's like life comes from life. So you can do that to improve life. So it's not scientific, actually.
Yeah, instead of taking a healthy rat and making it sick, you should take a sick rat and make it healthy.
Yeah. Or taking a dead rat and bring it back to bring it back to life.
That is proof. That would be a good one.
But the other way, any idiot can do it.
Yeah, anybody can do it. Anybody. You just take a broom and swing it hard enough.
The chain does it better.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Brajana then asked with deep sincerity, kindly tell me what is the highest sadhya, ultimate goal, and sadhana? What is the highest sadhya, ultimate goal, and sadhana? Means to attain the ultimate goal. For the jiva. Might be easier, because then you know that it's. As a student of the Nyaya philosophy, I have scrutinized the Nyaya Shastras and concluded by constitution the jiva is eternally different and separate from Ishwara. Further, the mercy of Ishwara is the sole means by which the jiva may attain liberation. The means of attaining this mercy is sadhana. What is attained by sadhana is called sadhya, or the goal. On numerous occasions, I have searched the Nyaya scriptures for a clue on these two matters and have drawn a blank. Please explain these two concepts, sadhana and sadhya. So, means in Nyaya, it doesn't explain sadhana and sadhya. It'll talk about the living entity and the Lord and getting out of the material world. You know, and that, but through using logic, you can make progress. But it doesn't tell you what's the sadhana for that jiva, and what actually is the goal for that process. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point: is that if you say no, for logic, I can figure out anything, but in logic itself and shastra, it doesn't explain those things. So how will it work? It's a tool that you work somewhere.
So it's basically incomplete.
It's incomplete, yeah. You know, and you're projecting it that because I'm not, I can figure out anything about that. No, it's not. It doesn't work like that. Brajana's question evoked an immediate response in Raghunath Das Babaji, who, with great pleasure, began to speak. My dear Sri Nyaya Panchanana, any person inquiring about sadhana and sadhya after the study of the Nyaya philosophical treatises is truly a fortunate soul, because the prime purpose of the Nyaya Shastra is to gather principles of logic by deliberation and thereby thereby to prepare the seeker of truth to analyze and compile the knowledge of sadha and sadhya objectively and without prejudice. On the other hand, those who study nyaya simply to become great controversial argumentators have unfortunately succeeded in missing the central point and have thereby acquired negative results. Their efforts are misapplied and their lives are an exercise in futility. Jiva Dharma, chapter 12. Right, so he says they're there to analyze. So the prime purpose is analyzing, you know, what is sadhana and sadhya that's given somewhere else, but within nyaya, the mechanics itself. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you have a manual on a machine, you know, let's say like a television. It tells you what button to push to turn it on and off and how to adjust the color or the this or that or things for the sound and that. That's all it tells you. It doesn't tell you what to watch and how to watch it. Isn't the manual say before you turn on the television, go into the kitchen, make a bowl of popcorn, bring it up like that, then this and that, then sit in it like that. It doesn't tell you those things. Right? So there's no discussion of sadhana. So that's nyaya. It tells how logic works, but the point is logic is for the purpose of analyzing what is, you know, sadhana and sadhana. So yeah, so that's so what he's mentioning, those who just use it for controversial argumentators, that's what nyaya is known for. And that's why we tend to stay away, because that's dry. But when you see how it's used in to analyze Krishna consciousness, it's not dry. Because it actually has a proper purpose. Yes?
Yeah.
Srila Jiva Goswami. By all the Vedas, one should learn about the Supreme Lord. One should consider how all scriptures conclude in Bhagavan. There are two types of Veda, mantra and brahmana. Mantra is of two types, those praising Bhagavan and those praising devatas. The first type directly shows Bhagavan. The second type has Bhagavan as a limb of karma and worship, with the worship of the Lord for other goals. Right? So like we were mentioning, is that the Lord becomes an anga, generally within karma. Right? Well, the first part, they're talking about the Lord directly. So now and again, you see, as those verses are quoted, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Jiva Goswami, the Acharyas, they quote those verses that directly talk about the Lord. And the one where he's an Anga Bhakti, then we generally don't read about those. Right? Brahmanas are of three types, Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, and Upasanakanda. Since karma is insentient and thus not independent, it is the Lord who gives the result of karma. Right? The mechanical activities can't give you the result. The Lord has to give it through his potency. You follow his law properly, then he gives you the result. Not that karma itself gives you the result.
Well, the argument would be whoever performed... Well, karma is insentient. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But we can argue that whoever performs the karma, he is the doer, and he gets result according to the karma, not necessarily God gives the results. Because I act, I get the result. Somebody else acts, he gets a different result. And it's based on activity. It's not based on like any other sources.
Yeah, well, that's nice, but then Acharyas are giving the point is that two people perform exactly the same thing, they don't get the same results. You know, the doctor does one operation, the person lives. Same operation, everything goes. There is the saying that the operation was successful, but the person died. You know, that also then shows that they didn't do something wrong. But the operation was successful. What they were trying to do, you know, they put the heart in there, everything was connected, everything. They did all the things that is textbook, but the person didn't live. So that's the thing, because the insentient matter, we're not in control of it. We can manipulate it, but we can't make the change. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you put something in the pan, and then the heat, then it makes it brown. You're not causing the brownness. You're going through the process by which the brownness is stipulated to manifest, but that's God's law. That it will manifest if you do this. You put the potatoes in the pan, and you know, with some butter and some heat, they will brown.
But that's God's law. You follow it, it happens. You're not making the browning process happen. You're not creating that the heat transforms the potato. You didn't create that pan has the ability to deal with heat and allow that. You know, you may have put these things together, but you're not actually the one who causes transformation. You take part in the process. You're an instrument. Yes.
In the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, he describes that Ashtanga Yoga process, when he describes 8 stages, and he compares it with the modern scientists trying to attain perfection.
Right.
So now they fly in air and then
enter into the
water and then walk on water. So Prabhupada says, actually both are trying to attain the same thing, the Siddhas and the modern scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And by that comparison, it's clear that materially everybody is trying to do the same thing. They also want the powers as God. And from that, another thing we observe is the materialists who don't recognize the presence of God as Paramatma and all, they can only attain the first few. But Prabhupada did say that the Ashtanga Yogis, they attain the higher ones, which ordinary scientists will not be able to.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Kamavasya and then going against the nature of the world. Only when you recognize the presence of Lord and act in that, then you can go.
Okay, then you follow the rules, you get the one that when you recognize the Lord in the
Bible. Yes. So,
that's a very good point.
Even that, in the context of this question, that, okay, I don't see where is the Lord and all. So you get some results which are in the context of just the, aspect of Lord in dealing with just the matter. But if there is something little higher involved and you want to really manipulate more, then you need to accept and work in mostly the yoga process given by Patanjali.
Yeah, and you also see even in just the gross materialists, those working in the gross field, that many times the people who are the top in their fields and getting the best results recognize God's hand.
Yeah, that they see the aspect of, at least they see the aspect of Vishnu.
Yeah, there's God some aspect of that, some, but at least they give God the credit. So it says, so it's not an uncommon thing.
And Prabhupada there in that context near only mentions about there are 3 offshoots of performing devotional service, 3 forms. One is ahamdropasana, that is self-worship. It elevates because you are seeing yourself as different from matter and spirit. Mm-hmm. You identify yourself as spirit. That's the reason these verses are mentioned about soham. And the second one is worshipping an imaginary form of God, like making a deity, maybe the demigod God or considering. And the third one is worshipping the Virat Rupa. These 3 are
elevating,
but it's not.
It's not top.
It's like an offshoot. Yeah.
Vishuddha, he uses different word.
But that's very good. It's an option because you get those. You have to see what is working. Because the whole point is the Vedic system works. It has its mechanics. And it moves you forward, but it only takes you as far forward as your consciousness.
Yeah.
So because they only have consciousness up to this level, they get stuck there. And when they go past that, then they actually get farther. There's like those, yeah.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.